Hello, and welcome to Diving Into Diabetes, the podcast where we explore the latest advances in best practices on individualized diabetes care. I'm your host, Dr. Alice Cheng from Toronto, Canada, and with me on the program is Dr. Bruce Perkins, professor, endocrinologist, epidemiologist, and clinician scientist in the Faculty of Medicine and the Institute for Health Policy Management and Evaluation at the University of Toronto. He is an international leader in diabetes research, particularly in the type 1 diabetes space. And among his many accomplishments, he sits on the executive of the ongoing landmark DCCT EDIC study, truly the gift that keeps on giving in type 1 diabetes. He is the perfect person to have on this podcast episode to discuss how to navigate type 1 diabetes screening, our current practices, the future vision, and the power of early detection. Welcome, Bruce.
Thank you, Alice. It's always a pleasure to speak with you.
So we learned from you on our episode about the roots of type 1 diabetes, that there are stages of type 1 diabetes that start long before the clinical symptomatic presentation of type 1 diabetes, as we typically think of it. So can you please briefly review those stages and how one can detect them?
Yeah, definitely. So this is an exciting area for medicine, that no longer do we wait for someone to suddenly have symptomatic hyperglycemia or DKA to identify that they were at risk of type 1 diabetes. There are preclinical stages that we can already start to identify. So they are broken up into essentially three stages. Stage one is when someone's developed the autoantibodies measurable in blood that predict that their 10 to 20 year horizon for type 1 diabetes is almost a guarantee. And that is by measuring five antibodies, two of them being positive. And currently in Canada, a number of labs have some of these, if not all of these, available, but not systematically so yet, but we can start to do that. Stage two is when they have these two or more antibodies, but they develop some level of dysglycemia, pre-diabetes range glucose. And then stage three is when they develop the clinical hyperglycemia or DKA. And then some speak of a stage four, which is essentially the natural history of type one, saying that they've gone on to develop complications of their type one diabetes.
So this is potentially new learning for some of our listeners, the idea of no longer thinking about type one diabetes as just the presentation of hyperglycemia, but the stuff going on even prior to that. So what are the potential benefits, though, of knowing this? What are the potential benefits of screening for early type 1 diabetes on disease management and potentially health outcomes?
Yeah, I mean, there are two key ones we think of from a medical perspective. One is that someone knows that they're at higher risk so that they can be aware of symptoms and be to help prevent diabetic ketoacidosis at onset, which is a major morbidity and problem with type 1 diabetes care. And the second main medical reason is that there are immunomodulatory therapies available in other parts of the world that we may have here in Canada eventually that can help to delay the new onset of type 1 diabetes. But I'll mention there's a few other non-medical reasons. One of them is just really helping to guide our patients at risk of disease to be prepared for their lives and to be educated about conditions that they're at risk for. That has a benefit from a patient's perspective.
Now, those are the upsides, but what are potential downsides of screening?
Yeah, so there are downsides for sure. So one is that you can create anxiety for someone who may be at risk. And ideally, you'd be able to predict a disease that's going to have its onset in the next year or so. But one of the downsides is that we can identify who's at higher risk very, very strongly with good predictive validity. We just don't know when. You know, will it be next year? Will it be 5 years from now or 10 years from now? That's a definite downside. The other downside would be from a public health perspective or our medical practice perspective is getting these standardized tests for antibodies into our practices, making sure they're universally available. Canada still has some work to do, even though most of us have some availability of some of these assays to us in our practices. And then secondly, remember from stage one to stage two, they need to develop dysglycemia, which means we have to survey for that dysglycemia. In some of the trials that have looked into this, they used repeated oral glucose tolerance tests, that's a bit of a burden and a potential downside. And so there's lots of work to look into the alternatives of OGTT, things like fasting glucose, even home capillary glucose monitoring, which is a simple thing that people can do, A1Cs, and of course, intermittent use of a continuous glucose monitor to see when someone's moving into that dysglycemic stage.
So how is Canada doing then when it comes to screening for type 1 diabetes, and what are some of the current challenges?
Yeah, so actually Canada is doing pretty well. So the first thing is that we need to be able to measure antibodies. And already now, even though they are universally available, all those five tests that I mentioned, GAD antibody, zinc transporter 8, microinsulin autoantibody, and the insulinola associated antigen 2, and then ICA or islet cell antibodies, they're not universally available everywhere. But most of us, regardless of where we are in the country, have access to some of these through clinical or hospital labs. So we can start doing this in our practices now. I want to be clear about that. The second is that there is this research network called TrialNet, and that at any age, anyone with a family member of type 1 diabetes can reach out to trialnet.org, and they can go to a TrialNet center and have antibodies measured. Or they can organize a mail-in blot paper test where they do a finger stick and send in blood and get screened for antibodies through TrialNet. So that exists now. Out of every 10 people who get type 1 diabetes, though, only 1 out of 10 has a family member. So we're going to be helping that 1 out of 10 people who get type 1 diabetes. And they're mostly the ones who are nervous about type 1 diabetes because they know about it and have fear of onset for them or for their children. So this is a really great thing that we have available to us. But the ultimate goal is that we can all be screened, regardless of family history, so that we can have the biggest impact on predicting and preventing the new onset of type 1 diabetes. Here, the Canadian Institutes for Health Research, along with Breakthrough T1D, formerly known as JDRF, have funded a network in Canada. It's led by Diane Werrett at SickKids Hospital in Toronto to figure out ways for general population screening. And so the challenges there are to figure out ways to have like a central lab in Canada to do the antibodies, to figure out acceptability and ways to do the glycemic monitoring for stage 2 and stage 3. But the other thing is to look in really novel ways, which would be to identify who's at genetic risk, even if they don't have a family member. And there are these things called genetic risk scores that actually can be measured from blot paper blood, for example, or blood samples. And so they're figuring out ways to implement that for general population screening. One example might be it being part of the heel prick test at birth as part of public health to identify those who are at higher risk of type 1 in their lives, and then they would go forward with antibody testing. And then the final thing just to say about challenge, the antibody testing. You know, I may not develop positive antibodies immediately in life. They might develop later on. And most agree that by the age of 15, people will have developed antibodies. So there's a screening kind of protocol that group, it's called Can Screen Type 1 Diabetes, is developing that at certain ages, for example, between the ages of 2 and 12, that there are 3 tests done for antibodies. And if someone's never been screened before and they're over the age of 15, that they would be screened once. Here I'm giving an example of how it might be done, but they'll be sorting out the exact protocol.
Now, just to clarify, Bruce, my understanding is that there's a large proportion of people who develop, or I should say newly diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, so stage 3 type 1 diabetes, who are adults, who are not children. So are you saying that if those individuals would have had antibodies positive at 15 already, even though they would have presented with their clinical stage 3 type 1 at, I don't know, age 30, for example?
Yeah, you're exactly right. So just to frame that, we know that the majority of type 1 diabetes onset occurs after adolescence or childhood. The average age is about 20. But the thought right now, and it's not known with certainty, is that even if I were to develop diabetes at 30, the likelihood is that I would have antibodies by the time I'm 15 or so, or that's the assumption, but it may not be correct. There's going to need to be more research with this. So it might be that someone, let's say when they start a screening program for antibodies, someone's 25 years old, maybe they get screened once, and then there may be a policy that we might learn that they should be screened like every decade, for example, to look for a risk. But at the moment, the assumption amongst experts in this field is that if you're antibody negative by age 15, the lifetime risk, though it's not known with certainty, is probably low or similar to the general population.
Thank you. Thanks for clarifying that. So given that we don't yet have a population-wide screening program, and it sounds like there's a lot of exciting research underway to help answer these very questions, what do you suggest we do now as practicing clinicians who are seeing people living with type 1 diabetes, just seeing people in general practice, for example? What should we be thinking about now? Where do we prioritize? Should we be starting to do this? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, so I think we have to use the tools we have at our fingertips, and that we need to take, it sounds weird to refer to people as fruit, but the low-hanging fruit, meaning those who already have some knowledge around type 1 diabetes but don't have it. So those are the family members. I think that's where we need to start this whole process. So for me, when I see someone with type 1 diabetes, I'd like them to be aware that their family members can get tested either through TrialNet right now, trialnet.org, or that I can arrange a blood test for them through our local lab. And these labs eventually will be working around the mail-in systems that TrialNet already has. So eventually we may have a mail-in system. And then, of course, eventually, the CanScreen type 1 diabetes project that I mentioned earlier will be developing a central lab for these tests in Canada that would include evaluation of the mail-in tests. But right now, for me, I would send to my local lab the antibody tests that are available at that lab. I think that we all need to be figuring out what we have available to us. Why not order that 5-panel and see what the labs are able to do, or to speak with our local lab clinicians to find out what they can do now, even if it's not all of the 5 antibodies, that we can start thinking about this kind of new frontier in predicting type 1 diabetes.
So Bruce, although you correctly said we should not be referring to people as fruit, I agree, though, that the analogy or the concept of the low-hanging fruit does make sense here when we're trying to decide who should we screen. You talked about people with a family history of type 1 diabetes, but are there other low-hanging fruit that we need to think about?
Yeah, people in this research area actually expand that low-hanging fruit to include those with any relative with type 1 diabetes, so meaning first, second, third, or beyond, if possible. So that's the first thing. And the second would be a personal history of autoimmunity. So the most common conditions would be like celiac disease, autoimmune thyroid diseases, hypothyroidism, and hyperthyroidism. Those are the most common, but any personal history of autoimmune disease, a person with Addison's, et cetera. What we don't know about, because let's say autoimmune hypothyroidism is so common in older age, well into adulthood, whether we need to screen someone with new onset hypothyroidism in their 50s, for type 1 diabetes risk, we don't know the answer to that, but mostly we think about risk when there are conditions occurring earlier in life. So definitely someone in childhood or young adulthood with any of those autoimmune conditions, I would say that's a low-hanging fruit for screening for type 1 diabetes risk.
Great advice. So final question, if we fast forward a few years, in an ideal world, what would you like to see happen in Canada when it comes to screening for type 1 diabetes?
Yeah, so this is my opinion, although I think this opinion is generally held in the research world around prediction of type 1 diabetes. The vision I see is that there's a heel prick test at birth. It identifies those who have the higher genetic risk for type 1 diabetes in their life. Those who are of a lower genetic risk are now they're done. It was a one-time genetic screening. Those who do have a higher risk genetic risk score would then enter a policy of having an antibody level checked 3 times through childhood. And if they come into their mid-teens without any antibodies, they're excluded. The others are focused for on-glycemic monitoring. And then we will now have a really nice way, probably not perfectly, but a really nice way of helping people expect the onset of their type 1 diabetes, prevent DKA, and institute new therapies that are now in development and coming to Canada that will help to delay the onset of type 1 diabetes.
That's a beautiful vision. That's a beautiful vision. And it's sort of taking us steps closer to the concepts of precision medicine, or really understanding that individual's risks and how to best help them. So thank you. Thank you, Dr. Perkins, for sharing your expertise with us today. And thank you to our audience for listening to this latest installment of the Diving Into Diabetes podcast. We hope you enjoyed our discussion on screening for type 1 diabetes. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and stay tuned for new releases. We'll be right back.